welcome to Misunderstood, a podcast dedicated to better understanding MS and learning to live well with MS. I'm your host, Katie Sloan. Our usual reminders as we begin. I am not an expert. I'm just a person like you, living with MS and trying to make the best of it. Misunderstood is based on my personal experience, what I've learned from my doctors, other care providers, and my own solutions-oriented research and pattern-finding obsession. While the majority of information I share has been vetted by doctors, I am not a doctor. My intention is that you use the information shared here as a springboard for discussion between you and your doctor regarding your future care options. Lastly, MS impacts each of us uniquely. I hope to shine a light on a wide range of approaches and strategies for living better with MS. But what you choose to do with that information is always your choice, and what works for one may not work for all. In our previous episode, we talked about depression and the highly effective healing power of dance with Dr. Susan Peyrovi, physician at Stanford and founder of TrueMedicineMS.com. The Myelin Room, Dr. Peyrovi's virtual dance program, usually hosts an event every month. Check out her website for future dates, TrueMedicineMS.com or DrSusanPeyrovi.com. These events are free and tons of fun. I'd love to see you there. Today, I'm going to share with you a topic I've spent the last 5 weeks researching intensely. Quite simply, it's water. And yes, you and I are dehydrated. Before we quite literally dive into this deep pool of data on dehydration, its impact on our health, and specifically how it impacts us as humans living with MS, for my gratitude portion of today, I'd like to briefly share about an incredible documentary I watched this past weekend, My Octopus Teacher. This Netflix documentary has been on my watch list since its release in 2020, but something else has always made its way to the top of the queue until this weekend when a dear friend highly recommended it to me again, and it seemed to fit in with my current obsession with water. I don't want to share too much about this incredible film because it's a beautiful experience to unfold as intended, but I will say that when a vulnerable filmmaker going through a very relatable, difficult time in his life returns home to the coast of South Africa and meets a female octopus, absolute magic happens. A beautiful friendship is formed over time as they get to know each other, and the filmmaker, Craig, is forever changed by this once-in-a-lifetime relationship. It's an incredible story of curiosity, stewardship, personal growth, perseverance, the unlikeliest of friendships, the circle of life, and death. I highly recommend this film. Drink a couple of glasses of water while you watch. Okay, enough hanging out on the side of the pool. Let's dive in. Are you thirsty? The answer is most likely yes, even if you don't think so, and especially if you, like me, live with MS. But I drink a lot of water, you say. Yeah, me too. In fact, I'm honestly never without my 20-ounce Yeti tumbler. Anyone who knows me, in real life or via Zoom, can verify this. Why? Well, I've always been thirsty, and especially since I met Dr. Peyrovi and began filtering my water in 2016, that's when I truly began to appreciate the taste of clean, simple water, which is also when I started to drink less alcohol, stop drinking Starbucks frappuccinos, and other beverages that were more detrimental to my health, and now I know actually cause dehydration rather than hydration. As an avid researcher in March, I came across a book that piqued my interest called Your Body's Many Cries for Water by Faridoon Batmengelage. It was a truly fascinating read that inspired even deeper exploration on the topic. We'll start today by sharing an overview of Dr. Batmengelage's research and related supporting information, and then I will share the criticisms of his approach since it does exist. In full transparency, and important for you to know, whenever I research a new topic, I intentionally research the topic from many angles, because if we only look for the angle we believe at first, confirmation bias is a real thing, and it's important to me to be as accurate as possible with what I believe and with what I share. That said, as someone who has been following Dr. Bhatmangalji's recommendations for just shy of 3 weeks since I finished his book, I sincerely do believe his message is indeed quite relevant for us. I'll share more about the changes I'm noticing in myself in a bit, but first, Dr. Bhatmangalji's book explores the damaging effects of chronic dehydration on the human body. To really understand what he's trying to say, we first need to understand just how important water is for us. You may have heard that humans are about 75% water. Yes, but what does that even mean? And does that amount of water always stay there? Or does it need to be replenished? So many questions when I realized how little I truly knew. In a moment, we'll look deeper into what water looks like in the human body. And for these statistics and some other supporting research in this episode, we'll thank Google Gemini AI. It's generally known that a human can survive about 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, and 3 weeks without food. But this is a very general estimate. We'll just look at water here. Survival experts say that a healthy person in moderate temperatures with very little activity could likely survive as long as 5 or 6 days. But in warmer conditions or with physical exertion, that number could shrink to just hours. So let's take a look at water inside the human body so we know just how critical it is for our survival. In terms of our general body composition, infants are about 70 to 75% water. Children, about 60% water. Adult men are about 55 to 65% water. And adult women are approximately 45 to 60% water, because women tend to have more body fat. It's important to remember that these are averages, and individual percentages vary quite a bit, especially when based on factors like age, gender, body composition, our muscle versus our fat, and our hydration levels. Now, the percentage of water also varies quite a bit across different body parts due to their specific functions and compositions. For example, many organs contain a high water content. In fact, our brain contains 73 to 85% water, kidneys 79 to 85%, lungs 83%, heart 73 to 80%, muscles 79%, liver 70 to 75%, skin 64 to 75%, and our blood, the plasma, approximately 90%. We also have organs that have significantly lower water content, like our bones coming in at only 31% water, and our fatty tissue, 10 to 20%, which contains less water than lean tissue. And lastly, our teeth, 8 to 10% water. It's important to know that our body as a whole and its many parts does not actively maintain a specific percentage of water without regular external input. Our body is constantly losing water through its many processes, such as breathing, sweating, and urination. So to maintain those healthy water levels in our body and all its parts, we need to replenish the water we're constantly losing to offset the losses and keep our body within its natural range of functionality. So when Dr. Bhatmangalji explores the specific damages that occur with chronic dehydration in the body, it makes sense when we fully realize how much of our organs and body systems need water to function. Dr. Bhatmangalji calls water the solvent of the body, that it regulates all the functions that we depend on for life. And when the body detects a water shortage, it begins to ration water, engaging in a triage dispersal, so that some critical functionality is able to be maintained while other functionalities, unfortunately, deteriorate. Water also allows all the major transportation that needs to occur within our bodies. So when we don't tend to our body by giving it adequate water, just like my plants in the garden, our body starts living in a drought situation. There's so much I could share today, but my goal is really to give you the most important information so that you can make an informed decision about your current and future water intake, and possibly inspire you to do more research about the connection between dehydration and your current levels of health. So without further ado, let's get right to it and share how dehydration can impact a human living with MS. As we look at the many symptoms that can manifest when the body is in a state of drought, I invite you to think about which of these symptoms you experience and what it might mean for you if you could lessen the impact of these symptoms, even just a little bit, by upping your water consumption. And who knows, maybe, just maybe, some of these symptoms might even disappear, like many of the testimonials in his book, which I will share later in this episode. So hold on to hope as we learn more about what happens to our body when it experiences dehydration. First, it's important to know that with age, for all humans, the thirst sensation diminishes in its ability to accurately alert us when we are in need of water. If we're thirsty, we're likely already dehydrated. Being dehydrated negatively impacts our kidney function, making us more prone to dehydration and lots of other symptoms. Living with a neurological condition can further impair our body's ability to sense thirst and regulate our fluids, which increases our likelihood of dehydration. When we start to become even mildly dehydrated, there are several body parts and body functions that are impacted very quickly. Some of the first signs of dehydration can be in our brains, as even mild dehydration can affect our cognitive function. These are messages from our body to let us know we're thirsty. Typical symptoms of early signs of dehydration are headaches, difficulty concentrating, mood changes, fatigue, dizziness or lightheadedness, dry mouth, darker urine, less frequent urination, and dry skin. Let's look now in greater detail at these and other signs of dehydration. Dehydration worsens fatigue. Dr. Batmanghelji believes that fatigue is a secondary symptom of dehydration. Common neurological symptoms of dehydration are headache, dizziness, lightheadedness, and in severe cases, confusion and even seizures if the brain is not getting enough fluids and oxygen to function properly. While more complex than this, simply put, water generates ATP and GTP, which are sources of energy. Dehydration worsens cognition. Even at mild levels, we can experience reduced attention and focus, impaired memory, and reduced executive function, which includes higher-level cognitive skills like problem-solving and planning. Dehydration also slows our processing speeds, slowing our reaction times, and makes our brains work harder, which can lead to mental fatigue. Even mild dehydration, 1 to 2% of our body water loss, can lead to noticeable impairments in memory and psychomotor skills. With higher rates of body water loss, we lose even more cognitive ability. Dehydration can negatively impact our mood, increasing our tension, irritability, confusion, anxiety, and depression. This makes it much more difficult for us to maintain a sense of calm. With lowered positive emotions like happiness and life satisfaction from dehydration, we can easily fall into a place where our body triggers the fight or flight response, which contributes to feelings of stress and anxiety. And in fact, dehydration increases our stress. It raises our heart rate, breathing, and interestingly, urination, all which contribute to greater fluid loss in the body. Wow. With a condition like MS that feeds on stress, this is really important for us to know. Dehydration can have a significant impact on inflammation. Studies show that even mild dehydration leads to an increase in pro-inflammatory cytokines, which are the markers of system inflammation in the body. We'll talk more about the impacts of inflammation as we go, as inflammation worsens many aspects of our health and overall body function. Dehydration impacts our hormones. Hormonal imbalances lead to a decrease in our feel-good transmitters like serotonin and dopamine. Hormones also help regulate our blood pressure, cortisol, insulin, sex hormones, and ghrelin, the hunger hormone. I did a parallel deep dive into hormones and dehydration since I'm of perimenopausal age, really fascinating stuff. And if you're in a similar stage of life, I highly recommend looking into this further, as this was also a huge contributor to my current dedication to drink more water. Dehydration worsens our bladder control and bowel efficacy. It's a funny, not funny thing, water and our bladder. We'd think that drinking less means less trips to the bathroom, but biologically, the opposite is actually true. Because when we are dehydrated, our urine is more concentrated with waste products and irritants. This literally irritates the lining of our bladder and other parts of our urinary system, making it more sensitive and prone to spasms and infection. When our bladder is irritated, it sends wonky messages to our brain, increasing our need to urinate more frequently and with greater urgency, even if there is a decreased volume of urine. Dehydration results in bacterial growth and an increase in UTIs because our system is unable to adequately flush bacteria out of the urinary tract. UTI symptoms such as increased frequency, urgency, pain, and burning sensations can worsen our bladder function and even lead to incontinence. Dr. Batmanghelli believes that since dehydration increases with age in many people, that this is why so many older folks lose bladder and bowel function and control. If MS ages us faster in some ways, it makes sense why so many of us could experience these symptoms earlier in life. Definitely worth consideration. I'll mention here, too, that since a number of us struggle with the physicality of getting to the bathroom, it can be really tempting to drink less, not more. So Dr. Batmanghelli's information here is really important for us to consider in terms of our long-term health outcomes. Dehydration also worsens medication side effects. Dehydration can significantly exacerbate side effects. Certain medications cause dehydration, and if we aren't getting enough water to begin with, we're at higher risk of experiencing dehydration-related complications. This is especially true with diuretics, laxatives, some diabetes medications, chemotherapy drugs, lithium, blood pressure medications, anti-inflammatories, and antihistamines. If we are already dehydrated, there can be a higher concentration of certain medications in our body than intended, which can intensify side effects, making it more difficult for our kidneys to function properly, maintain important electrolyte balance, increase gastrointestinal side effects, and even increase risk of cardiovascular side effects. All of this to say, for those of us taking medications, it's really important to know the side effects of our medications and to stay properly hydrated to ensure our body can handle our current dosage as intended. As a side note here, as someone who uses Kesimpta, which is a B-cell depleting therapy for MS, I did some additional research. Dehydration isn't currently listed as a common or direct side effect of Kesimpta, but there are a few indirect ways that B-cell therapies can potentially contribute to dehydration or make it more challenging to manage. For example, by targeting our B cells, this can increase our risk of infections, including those in the urinary tract or other systemic infections. Symptoms that occur alongside many infections like fever, diarrhea, and even vomiting can all contribute to dehydration. Some general side effects of B cell depleting therapies can be headache and fatigue, which can make us much less likely to be active and drink fluids. It's also possible that Kesimpta, like many medications, can subtly affect our body's thirst regulation system. Our next symptom is also possible with Kesimpta and other injectables. Dehydration worsens injection site reactions. While most common injection site irritation occurs from the physical trauma of the needle injection, the body's reaction to the injected substance or an allergic response, when we are dehydrated, our skin becomes more sensitive and more susceptible to itching or other types of discomfort. Because dehydration leads to reduced local circulation, it might hinder natural healing processes of our skin at the injection site, prolonging the discomfort. Systemic inflammation, common with MS, can also increase skin reactivity. Dehydration worsens our ability to achieve restorative sleep. Even mild dehydration can negatively impact our body's circadian rhythm, increase muscle cramping, cause headaches, and induce dry mouth and dry nasal passages, which can lead to snoring and sleep apnea. Dehydration can impact our production of melatonin. In turn, poor sleep causes an array of negative impacts on our body. Studies show that adults who sleep only 6 hours a night instead of 8 have a higher rate of dehydration because of how the body's hormonal system regulates hydration. Check out some of the episodes on sleep for more sleep-related information and tips. Here's one that matters a lot for us. Dehydration can weaken and therefore damage the myelin sheath, since water is crucial for both the formation and function of the myelin sheath that insulates our nerves and keeps them functional. Nerve cells, including those with myelin sheaths, rely on a delicate balance of water and electrolytes to function. As the myelin becomes dehydrated, it loses structural integrity and its ability to protect our nerve fiber functionality, impacting their ability to allow rapid and efficient transmission of electrical signals. These signals depend on electrolytes like sodium and potassium to generate those electrical impulses. Interesting, right? All nerves need water to function properly. Dehydration can lead to impaired nerve function and worsening of neuropathy symptoms like tingling, numbness, and pain. Dehydration also decreases the blood volume, which allows less blood flow into peripheral nerves, depriving our nerves of essential oxygen and other nutrients imperative for their health and function. Since dehydration also contributes to an increase in inflammation, inflammation can further aggravate nerve pain and neuropathy discomfort, as well as lead to muscle cramps and painful spasms. Dehydration, especially in older adults, can be associated with white matter lesions on MRI scans. It's important to note that these lesions are not the same as MS lesions, but dehydration can cause a reduction in overall brain volume, affect the density of both gray and white matter in the brain, and reduce cerebral blood flow. Dehydration can also exacerbate the symptoms caused by MS brain lesions. Dehydration, because it impairs our body's ability to cool itself, makes it more difficult for us to regulate our temperature. This can exacerbate Uptoff's phenomenon symptoms by contributing to higher body temperatures, which can cause additional fatigue, body weakness, visual disturbances, and worsen our cognitive function. Dehydration can impair toxin removal from the body. Water flushes our body of waste products and toxins, and when there's not enough water for these processes to occur, buildup of toxins can occur, which further contributes to inflammation and a slew of other problems. Dehydration can cause our blood to thicken, which can in time reduce blood flow and negatively impact our body's ability to deliver oxygen and nutrients to our tissues. This can create stress for our cells, which promotes inflammation. Dehydration can cause joint pain. With a lack of water, the lubrication in our joints, called synovial fluid, which is largely water, is reduced, which increases friction and inflammation in our joints, which contributes to joint pain and stiffness. Dehydration can impact our ability to breathe. If our airways are too dry, this triggers the release of cytokines, which increases the risk and severity of respiratory symptoms. Dehydration can impact our immune activity. When our white blood cells are in a state of drought, it's more difficult for them to travel through the bloodstream and lymphatic system to reach sites of infection in the body, which inhibits our healing processes by delaying our body's response to a variety of pathogens. With reduced lymphatic system functionality, it loses its ability in immune surveillance as well as its ability to transport cells where they need to go to protect us and keep us functioning properly. Protector T cell activity can also be impaired since they depend on water to function. So when we're dehydrated, we become not only more susceptible to infection, but it's also more difficult to eliminate anything the body is trying to get rid of. For these reasons and more, dehydration slows our recovery from illnesses. Since our elimination is impacted, so can be our gut microbiome. And dehydration triggers the release of histamine, knocking its delicate balance out of whack. Wow. And this is just a brief summary of some of what I read, since I wanted to share what's most relevant for us as folks living with MS. It can be easy to start to freak out. I did a bit. But the very good news is that much of this is reversible, at least to some extent, with water. We'll talk about how in a moment, because it's actually not quite as simple as it sounds. But first, to instill in us realistic hope and faith. In Dr. Batmanghali's book, I really appreciated the patient testimonials in the form of actual copies of their letters, which were fascinating to read. From those testimonials, patients indicated that they experienced healing from sinusitis, seasonal allergies, snoring, joint pain, obesity, chronic fatigue syndrome, heart disease, hypertension, GERD, high cholesterol, insomnia, food allergies, arthritis, leg cramps, excessive sweating, anxiety, skin conditions, heartburn, morning sickness, back pain, asthma, depression, migraines, digestive issues, tingling extremities, stiff neck, and constipation. There is even one testimonial from a gentleman named John who lives with MS in Pennsylvania. He writes about the significant swelling in his legs and how within just 2 weeks, the swelling had been reduced by 90%. He also writes about his increased and consistent energy, as well as a greater sense of calm, less anxiety, more optimism, and even greater productivity. He also writes that he's now able to be more attentive to the natural rhythms of his body. I hope that fills you with hope that maybe, just maybe, we could improve some of our symptoms with water. Now, we do have to be careful. So this is something you should definitely talk with your doctor about, especially if you are experiencing serious symptoms. I had a conversation with two doctors just to get their take on water and to ensure I was increasing my water intake in a healthy manner. Why does this matter? Why can't I just drink more? What could it hurt? Well, these are all good questions to ask, and here's a few things to consider. Water and salt have a very important and very delicate relationship in our body. This is why athletes need to be very careful when rehydrating after strenuous exercise with electrolytes to avoid the negative symptoms of rapid rehydration. Most of us consume too much salt, but if you've significantly reduced your salt intake or have a medical condition where this is an important balance and it's heavily monitored, like a kidney disorder, adrenal insufficiency, or cystic fibrosis, it's really important to discuss any changes to our diet, including our water, with our doctors. In a similar way, sugars, especially but not solely artificial sweeteners and sweeteners used in diet products, can have an interesting relationship with water. So quick changes to our solid and liquid intake of water and sugars can be tricky in terms of its impact on our metabolic processes and can be very unsafe if rapid changes are made to our electrolytes and blood sugar levels. Sugars include fruit juice, and alcohol is a significant cause of dehydration since it's a diuretic. Many teas, even our beloved herbal teas, are also diuretics, and coffee, and anything with caffeine. And remember, a lot of medications and supplements can also impact our hydration. So you really need to have someone knowledgeable take a good look at your current habits and symptoms to deeply understand what you should change first if you want to increase your water intake. For a healthy person who is eliminating regularly, has healthy blood sugars, metabolics, and cardiovascular health, the process will be faster. But just because we need to use caution doesn't mean we shouldn't consider trying. To start increasing your water intake, it's first important to know how much you're currently drinking. General advice is, as a minimum, to drink half your body weight in pounds in ounces of water. Since I'm perimenopausal, live with MS, and experience a number of the symptoms mentioned today, and my climate is rapidly gaining in temperature as summer approaches, I'm actually drinking more. I've also recently upped my activity levels while outdoors in changing temperatures, so I'm trying to compensate for that as well. In general, we can increase our water by 8 to 10 ounces a day. If we try that for a few days and we're comfortable with it and urinating and defecating daily and not experiencing any adverse side effects, we can continue with gradually building our water intake. We should carefully monitor our urine color. Clear to pale yellow indicates good hydration. Anything darker indicates a need for more fluids. If we notice any increase in inflammation, like new swelling of extremities, it can be an indicator to slow down. Okay, now, remember at the beginning I told you I'd also look at the other side of this and see what the critics say. Well, here we go. And it's up to you to use your personal discernment and the resources you have, like your trusted doctors and your own research, to determine how you'd like to proceed, since we are all on our own journey in this life. Current critics believe that Dr. Bhatmangalji has oversimplified the science of disease, since he believes that dehydration is a root cause of most pain and many degenerative diseases. Many current physicians believe that diseases like MS and asthma, allergies, hypertension, diabetes, lupus, etc., have well-established underlying mechanisms that go way beyond simple dehydration. They also cite a lack of recent scientific evidence, and since Dr. Bhatmangalji's studies were done quite some time ago, there are fewer recent studies looking solely at the impact of dehydration on various aspects of human health. There is also criticism because Dr. Bhatmangalji was vocal about his largely distrust of pharmaceuticals and his belief that they are primarily driven by profit. He believes many pharmaceuticals are a temporary solution that only mask the root cause of many diseases. Even amongst the critics, though, there are many points of agreement that hydration is important for the proper functioning of various bodily systems, and that there are more subtle signs of dehydration than usually discussed. To help you make your own decision on where you stand on this topic, I asked my somewhat new Google Gemini AI friend to find recent studies on dehydration as root causes of disease. And this was their response. Quote, "Recent studies increasingly suggest that chronic low-level dehydration may play a more significant role in the development of various diseases than previously recognized. While dehydration is not typically considered the sole root cause in the traditional sense of a single pathogen, it can act as a significant contributing factor and exacerbate the risk or progression of several conditions, such as cardiovascular health, metabolic disorders, kidney disease, cognitive function, constipation, UTIs, kidney stones, coronary heart disease, and stroke. While these studies show associations, more research is needed to definitively establish dehydration as a direct cause of these diseases. Other lifestyle factors and underlying conditions also play a significant role. Researchers are actively working to understand the biological mechanisms by which chronic underhydration might contribute to disease development. In conclusion, the emerging body of research suggests that maintaining adequate hydration is crucial for overall health and may play a more significant role in preventing or mitigating the risk of various chronic diseases than previously thought. While dehydration is unlikely to be the sole root cause, it appears to be a modifiable risk factor that warrants greater attention in public health recommendations and individual health management. So what do you think? I hope you enjoyed learning a bit more about water and how hydration and dehydration can impact our health in both positive and negative ways. Over the past month since I started this research, and in a more concerted effort in the last 18 days, I have slowly yet drastically increased my water intake. It's obviously still a bit early to see how it will impact me long term, but there are a few things I can already share. I am sleeping better, and not getting up to pee as often, which really surprised me at first, even after reading, to expect this. My skin feels less dry, and this is a time of year when it often feels dry as the temperatures rise rapidly where I live. Two people have told me that I'm glowing. No, I'm not pregnant, but I guess I look healthier in some ways. Definitely TMI, but in an effort to be transparent, I am now pooping twice a day when I used to be mostly once a day person. And those stools are consistently a type 4 on the Bristol stool chart, which defines the healthiest poop as, like a sausage or snake, smooth and soft. I'm getting fuller faster, so I'm not as hungry at mealtimes. My partner has also upped his water intake, but a little more recently, and he reports that he's feeling good but hasn't yet noticed significant changes. It's important to note, however, he is younger than I am and lives without any diagnosed health conditions. It will be interesting to see what we both continue to notice over time. What's helped me most on this journey is taking an honest account of what I am actually drinking versus what I perceived I was drinking. Using colorful elastic bands on my Yeti mug that I move and as I fill my glass helps me monitor my intake throughout the day. Bonus, it's colorful and oddly fun and satisfying, and even makes my tumbler easier to grip. There are also fun interactive Bluetooth water glasses that measure your intake for you. I've heard good things about them, but have no personal experience with them yet. Many of my MS health goals are hard. Like the 2+ years of daily temperature immersion practice to deliberately expand my range of temperature comfort. This one, on the other hand, seems quite easy in comparison. The best part? My increased water intake likely costs nothing. So, what do you have to lose by drinking more water? Likely, all we'll lose are symptoms we're trying to recover from anyways. My hope today is that we all acknowledge the importance of staying hydrated and be diligent monitors of our personal water consumption, especially as many of us enter into the warmer season of summer. 2, that we take a close look at all the liquids we are drinking that might not be helping us with our long-term health goals and consider replacing some or all of those with water. 3, that we consider furthering our own research and talking with our care team about ways that increasing our water intake and doing so in a way that is safe for us could positively impact our current health conditions. And 4, that we remain open to all the avenues of healing that exist for us. Tomorrow is a new day, and there's lots within our control and ability that we can do to help ourselves feel better. To continue this conversation, you are welcome to attend our Misunderstood Flock meetings via Zoom the first Saturday of each month. That's this Saturday on May 3rd. Flock members, bring your updates about your one thing you're working on this year in terms of prioritized MS-related healing. And I'd love to hear about your current water intake and what you think about the possibility of increasing your water to alleviate any of your current MS symptoms. If you're not yet a Flock member but would like to be, please join us. We are all people living with MS from around the world that meet via Zoom monthly to support each other and continue our learning on the episode topics. We also support each other through hardships and celebrate our successes together. You can learn more and join us by visiting our Patreon page. As always, I encourage all listeners to reach out with MS-related questions, comments, future podcast topics, or guest ideas via email. And lastly, remember, as we travel through life with MS, we're certain to hit some turbulence. We'll get through it, especially if we're flying together, supporting one another, and honking our encouragement. As always, thank you for listening, and until next time, be well.